Welcome to The Wildlife, a program that probes the mysteries of the animal world through interviews with scientists and other wildlife investigators. I'm Laurel Nemi, your host for The Wildlife, and also author of Animal Investigators, How the World's First Wildlife Forensic Lab is Solving Crimes and Saving Endangered Species. Today on The Wildlife, I'll talk about gorillas and the bushmeat trade with Pierre Fidenci, president of Endangered Species International. But first, let me play you today's creature call. This week's creature call is the sound of the world's largest primate. It's an endangered species that lives in Africa's remaining equatorial forest. Now listen carefully and see if you can guess today's creature call. At the end of the show, I'll play these sounds again and tell you what kind of animal made them. Now, let me turn to my conversation with Pierre Fidenci. Pierre is the founder and president of Endangered Species International, also known as ESI, which is a conservation organization supporting projects worldwide, including in the Democratic Republic of Congo, India, the Philippines, Borneo, and Colombia. ESI works with many species largely unknown to the public and ignored by other conservation organizations. One of the hallmarks of ESI's work is its emphasis on addressing the needs of the people that live within the habitat in order to conserve a particular endangered species. One area that ESI works in is the Congo, where the bushmeat trade is a leading threat to many endangered animals such as chimpanzees, bonobos, and smaller primates. In 2008 and early 2009, ESI monitored the trade using undercover methods at key markets in the city of Pointe Noire, the second biggest city in Congo. Doing this, it found that more than 300 gorillas were butchered each year and that 95% of the illegal bushmeat sold originated from one region, which has unprotected rainforest and is one of the last reservoirs of biodiversity and endangered animals in the area. Today we'll talk more about this work and what can be done to help save gorillas. Pierre Fidenci was born in southern France, and at an early age he was already involved in discovering, studying, and protecting nature. He quickly developed a special interest in amphibians and reptiles and actively participated in various wildlife research and conservation programs. At the age of only 20, Pierre started Las Paulas National Park Project in Costa Rica. At that young age, he'd also already won multiple environmental awards. More recently, he has received conservation awards from the BP Conservation Program, the Turtle Conservation Fund, and the Sophie Danforth Conservation Biology Fund. With passion and expertise, he has developed and directed conservation projects in South, Central, and North America, as well as in Southeast Asia and Europe. His areas of expertise include amphibians and reptiles, applied conservation, biological surveys, and community-based projects. He's also a member of the IUCN Species Survival Commission. When we spoke recently, I asked him how he first got interested in gorillas.
Well, since the age of 14, I was already fascinated by the gorillas. So at one point...
What did you find so fascinating about them?
Well, first... Like as I said before, I'm fascinated by the rainforest. So everything that is attached to the rainforest fascinates me. But the gorillas are such a big animal. For me, that was just to see a gorilla in the wild, not in the zoo, that would be the ultimate fantasy of a biologist. That was really a dream. And also, I feel when I see a gorilla in front of me, I feel like almost myself. So that's how it started. And then when I started to ESI, I decided, well, now we have ESI. I want to contribute to gorilla conservation myself. I want to put my foot in the field. Huh. So then I went myself to Congo and then went to the field. Discover the areas where the gorillas are, met a lot of people, and then started to build the team right in Congo.
Was that the first
ESI.
was that the first time you saw gorillas in the wild, or when was the first time you actually saw
them? That was the first time, yes. That was the first time, yes.
And what did you think? What was that experience? When did you first see a gorilla in the wild? It's been one of my dreams, too. I just so want to do that.
Well, that was extraordinary, of course. It was one of those moments that I will never forget in my life. It was just fascinating, incredible. I don't know how to describe it. I mean, get into my mind for the rest of my life. But for me, what was also very not fascinating but disturbing, even more so, is to see that people kill gorillas. I saw that, and to see that you can buy a hand of a gorilla for only $6, and that was very disturbing when I saw all of that in Congo. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and where did you see that? In the city or in the bush?
Okay, I saw that in the city, yes, in the markets, in the local markets in the city. But also when we went deeper in the field to look for the area where actually the hunting is occurring, the hunting for the gorillas, I also saw... bringing back gorillas, so, you know, freshly killed gorillas, and then just in front of us, cutting the hand and immediately of the gorilla. The gorilla hand is something a little bit fetish, something that is particular, as so they cut the hand immediately and then they will smoke it, and then like this preserve the shape and of the hand and then sell it. Like that.
And why is it desired? What's the...
Well, there's some belief that if you eat a gorilla hand for some ethnies, for some people, it's give you good fortune, it will make you stronger and so on. And then, of course, not everybody believe in that. And interesting enough, before, a long time ago in certain areas of Congo, nobody believed that. It's that some of these beliefs are new, actually.
Really?
So we need to fight back. In certain areas, yes. News, when I mean new, it's new in terms of within the 100 years period. So basically, when the white people came in, there was a certain change of beliefs in certain communities and ethnies, and still some ethnies will never eat gorillas. They will never touch gorilla meat. But unfortunately, many Congolese, nowadays more than before, and that's been proven, do eat gorilla meat, and that's a bad bad trend.
And then tell me a little bit more about this species you're looking at. We're talking here about the Western Lowland gorillas.
That's correct. The Western Lowland gorillas. So that's the gorilla. And we are working in the eastern part of Congo. And when I say Congo, it's the Republic of Congo, because there's a little bit confusion sometimes with the other Congo, which used to be the Zaire before. So we are working in a smaller country, the smallest Congo.
And sometimes people call it Congo Brazzaville, yeah?
That's correct, yeah. Congo Brazzaville. I should have said that right away.
And so, and politically, has that been... In the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is the former Zaire, that's been very war-torn for a while now. Is it the same situation in the Republic of Congo?
No, the situation is different. When we deal with gorillas in the Congo Brazzaville, we're not dealing with the wars, with crimes and things like that. It's a pure killing of the gorilla for the bushmeat. And then also, of course, we have problems with habitat destruction and deforestation. But the situation in terms of wars and also, I should say, economic scenario is very different, because the Congo Brazzaville has a very, very extremely low density of human. But the other Congo has a much higher density of people, and also, of course, very different social economic scenarios in the other country.
And then, now, the Western lowland gorilla is an endangered species. Is that right?
That's correct. It's classified as critically endangered.
And how many, do we know how many exist in the wild?
That's a good question. Nobody knows. We have an estimate of...
I know, I always ask these. Nobody knows.
Maybe we think it's less than 200,000. But for example, you know, in the case of our project, we are at the southern edge of the limit of the range of the species. So basically, we are at the frontier of the lowland gorilla, the western lowland gorilla. But that's also very important for us, because we are the limit where the gorillas of the species is found. And therefore, it's also important for us to try to protect those remaining populations. Now, the population we're working, how many are left in the wild, we're not sure yet. We are going to start a full surveys inventory this year. But what we know is how many are killed every year in the area where we're working.
So tell me how you started to do this research, you know, how you started to research the bushmeat market. I know you went undercover, or your people in your organization.
Right. I went myself to the market, but I didn't did the undercover method study, because, as I said before earlier, I cannot do that, because I won't be credible. The locals will see immediately that I will try to collect information against selling the gorilla meat. So basically, what we did, we train our local team, made of only Congolese people, and those people went to the farmers markets basically. And inventory the sale of gorilla meat.
And so how
to find gorilla meat? Yes, go ahead.
I was going to say how, just to talk about bushmeat more in generally, bushmeat can be a lot of different things, not just gorilla. Correct.
Correct. Bushmeat means everything that is found in the world, every animal that is hunted is bushmeat. So basically, you can find from rats to any kind of animals. You can imagine snakes, anaconda, turtles, who we mentioned earlier,
and
birds,
so,
and so on.
So how can you, when you go to these markets and inventory the sale of gorilla meat, how can you tell gorilla meat from something else?
Okay, this is where the tricky part starts, because the gorilla meat is, in fact, hidden, not hidden in the back of a store or in back of in the corner of inside of a box, but it's sold, smoked, and cooked already. So basically, the meat almost looks like buffalo meat. That's what the problem is.
It looks
if you don't have a nick.
I'm sorry. It looks like what kind of meat? Any other kind of meat?
Yes. Yeah. The buffalo.
Okay.
Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. Buffalo.
It looks the same. Yeah, buffalo. It looks the same. Same meat. So basically, then you need to have an expert eye to make sure to make the difference. But also, what is very important is to make sure that the people who sell the bush meat become your friend. And they will tell you also, yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, that's gorilla meat. And then you, Okay, let me look at it. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's true. This is what I mean. But if you look from a distance, you will not make a you cannot see the difference.
Okay.
Because the meat is presented, is already cut in pieces. Most of the meat is cut already on a like a size a hand size piece, and sold in pieces, and already smoked, preserved the meat, of course, because it's sold on open market.
And is it smoked in the marketplace, or is it smoked out in the bush after?
No, it's smoked in the bush because it's too risky to carry even a big piece of, let's say, gorilla arm or leg towards the main city. It will be too risky. Not that the person will be, probably the person will not go to jail, but the person will caught selling that or transport carrying that with him will be a fine through corruption, you know. Not really a fine to tell him to stop doing that, but say, hey, look, you have something illegal, so give me some money. That would be basically what it is.
Okay. So just to avoid the surcharge, so to speak.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah. To avoid the surcharge. That's,
exactly,
yeah. That's exactly the word. Yeah.
And then is there... So it goes from the bush to the market. Are there different people? Who's doing the hunting, and then who's doing, you know, the transportation and the selling in the different markets? Are they the same person, or is it different people all through the process?
Okay, so they are completely different people. The hunting are locals living in the area of the gorillas, and it's all what they do. They hunt for bushmeat, not only for gorillas. They don't hunt specifically for gorillas, but they hunt for all kind of meat because everything is viable and everything can be sold. It doesn't matter what it is. Of course, gorilla meat has a better value. Now, after that, when the gorilla is hunted, it's brought to the nearest village. Once you get to the village, this is where it is cut in pieces and smoked.
Okay.
Once it's smoked, another buyer comes in. That buyer will be the one who's going to carry it all the way to the main city. So usually it will be Brazzaville, for the Congo, and Pointe Noire. Once it gets there, another buyer buy it, and that will be the final one who will be selling it at the market.
And is the final...
So basically, uh-huh.
Is the final buyer somebody in Brazzaville or Pointe Noire, or does it end up going also overseas?
No, it only stays for a domestic market. It never goes abroad.
And
the only one who consume that meat are the Congolese, as far as, yeah.
And is it a status symbol to consume gorilla meat? You had mentioned that the gorilla meat has a better value. How much better, you know, how much is gorilla meat? And is it, you know, something for wealthier people or not really?
The price... It's not that much expensive at all than other piece of meat, actually. You know, a hand-sized piece of gorilla costs about $6, US dollars. And then if you buy a turtle, you will probably pay the same amount of money. So, and the size, of course, is a little bit smaller of the gorilla meat. But my point is the price is not expensive. So anybody can buy it, and basically pretty much everybody buy that. But there is a special group of people who do target gorilla meat because it has so-called a status or some kind of value put towards the meat, being stronger and things like that. So that's a world. As the value is concerned.
What are the main issues with bushmeat? First, you know, why has it become a commercial industry now when it's really been a food source for thousands of years? Has there been an explosion in the bushmeat trade, and what's caused that?
Well, there is surely there has been an explosion, and part of it is because also of the explosion of the population. Population has been growing enormously in some parts of Africa. However, if you look now at Congo, where we have a project, we cannot really say that there is a population explosion because we have one of the less populated country in Africa.
Okay.
However, the consumption of gorilla is, like you said, it's nothing new. It has been, it was done a long time before. Now, what is new is that we have this big concentration of people now in rural areas. So we have more and more people living in big cities. And those people living in big cities do prefer, apparently, that's what our study shows, gorilla meat. Most of the gorilla meat is not sold locally in the village. The people who hunt for the gorilla meat do not eat the gorilla meat, usually. They just want to sell it. Where? The final destination is usually, and close to 90%, the big cities. So the more people live in the big cities, the more demand for bushmeat. It's not a local demand. Yes, of course, some locals do eat gorilla on an axe, but it's not the main reason why the gorillas are declining. This is because people live in the city. That increasing population, people moving toward the city as well, have created this push in the consumptions of bushmeat and the gorillas. Yeah.
And then has the bushmeat trade affected gorilla populations? Is it a major threat to gorilla populations in the Congo?
For some populations, like the one we're working, it's basically the main threat. I think, for example, all that if you estimate that you have about 300 gorillas left in a particular area, and they can hunt, kill 1 to 2 gorilla a week if they want to, and usually we are the last year in 2009, that was our figures. Then the population is not under immense threats. And now, even if you go to the field and try to look for gorillas to see how many are left, it's extremely difficult to see them, of course, because they are very afraid of human beings. They've been hunting all the time. Tragic story.
And where exactly...
The population is very much declining.
So getting back to your work, and what area are you working in specifically?
Okay, so we're working in an area that is about 150 kilometers from Pointe Noire. Pointe Noire is a major city, second biggest city in the Congo. So it's near the Atlantic Ocean. And it's along a major river. It's called the Kouliou River. It's a very, very big river that goes into the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. We work about 50 to 80 kilometers upstream from the ocean, along that river and in inland. Maybe I should say, how did we find that area?
I was just about to ask, how did you find that area?
Well, because the Congo is pretty big already, so we got in fact this information through our Congolese team. They did a fantastic work. Every time they went to the farmers market every week and gather every information they could, detailed information where the meat come from. And every time we found gorilla meat, the meat came from the same area, the exact same area. So after a while, we were pretty sure that that's where the gorillas got hunted. So we went there and we went to confirm that the people were really hunting for the gorillas in this particular area. So we witnessed also gorilla hunting on our own eyes. That's a pretty tough thing, but
How did you even witness
it? Confirm.
Were you, you know?
Well, we first, you know, present ourselves honestly. You know, we are an NGO. We are here for conservation of endangered species and also to help the people. And then before going to the field with the hunters, we met the chief of every villages in the area, and we had meetings and we talked. And then the chief, every chief actually of each village did agree on gorilla conservation. They said, yes, I think we would like to have that too. We totally agree with that. So when we went to the field with some gorilla hunters, the chief told us, you can go with this hunter. He belongs to the village. He will show you. He will bring you to some gorillas. And, you know, he has to go hunting this week. You just go with him. And you will see if it's true or not, if really people are hunting for gorillas. So we went with those people, and of course, you know, the we were not here to arrest anybody because we do not believe in this kind of actions that will create more tensions, and I don't think that will solve the problem. And then even the hunters who hunt for gorillas agree to stop hunting, and we come back to the same situation. As long as they get an alternative livelihood, something that can supplement, stop their hunting, then they will do it with no problem. So basically, yeah, we went to the forest and we documented the hunting. And then came back, saw all the process, how the shipping and everything, the cutting and these horrible things happening. And then from there, we had other meetings with the chief and the villages. And everybody agreed to stop hunting the gorillas. But again, it's not only about agreement. Now we need to find some... strong, we need to get into strong actions, which means finding some alternative livelihood. We'll come back to the same story.
And what types of alternative livelihood might be possible in that region? Is ecotourism an option?
Ecotourism could be an option, but we are going to start a study on that to make to assess the value of ecotourism, because we thought at the beginning, well, maybe we could do ecotourism, however, it's very, very difficult to do tourism with lowland gorillas. Lowland gorillas move a lot every day, and they also are very difficult to acclimate with people. So to have a group, for example, to become a friendly group, I should say, and then visit it on a regular basis, that takes a long time to find a group, and also it's more difficult with lowland gorillas than it would be with, for example, mountain gorillas.
Why is
so,
that?
Tourism is not well. They move more, first of all, in, you know, on a daily basis. They nest, but they change nest a lot. But and also in the area where we are, obviously, they are heavily hunting. So they are extremely afraid of human presence. Okay. Very, very difficult, if not impossible, to approach the group. That makes the things very difficult. And also the area itself could be a good potential for tourism because it's close, not far, too far away from the main city. However, in the past, many locals have been very disappointed by expectations from other NGOs saying, yes, there's a potential for tourism. Okay, maybe we can do that. But in fact, the results never came about. So we are very careful to tell to the people, okay, this is going to be what's going to bring you money. We don't know yet for sure. We are still in a process of understanding more the culture, the local culture, and also to study the economics, sure that we can find some alternative. We are also looking at, again, agriculture, We are also looking at fish ponds and other sources. But again, it's not an easy process because bushmeat hunting, it's really part of the culture. So that's a tough one. You know? And then again, when I say the culture, it's the culture where they get the food from. Over there, they don't do agriculture. You know, basically, it's hunting and gathering fruits and things like that in the forest. So, well, that's a huge change of mentality. But also, what can we do to help them to find another alternative that can work for them? Because what we might think is going to work might not work for them because of their cultural differences.
And then, is there logging in the area as well? Is it a heavily forested?
Yes, there is logging. No, it's not. It's a secondary forest, and the primary forest is in the areas where it's too costly to do logging because it's too the hills are too steep.
Okay.
There's still some illegal logging going on in the area. However, it's not the main threat at the moment, but it could be coming in the future. So that's why also we are working with local communities in envisioning a park, a reserve for the gorillas, and also preserving the habitat.
And is there a park there or a reserve existing now, or no? It's community land.
The Congo has definitely. All right. The land where the gorillas are, it's a community land and a concession for logging.
Okay.
So private owners, yes. But we don't have any park or reserve in the area.
And then how, when you do this exploration of possible alternatives with the community, how does that work? What is the process for discussing these issues with the communities?
Well, you know, first of all, we have to be accepted by the local communities because we are outsiders. And when I say that, even if our team, and this is the case at the moment, our local team in the Congo is Congolese, but they're also outsiders because they are not people from the village. And that's very important to understand that in the first place. So we have to be first well accepted. Once we are accepted, we get into the process of just talking what also they will think that would provide an alternative for themselves, not what we think. And then after that, we bring our inputs, meaning that, okay, maybe you should do that instead or things like that. And then we start a feasibility study. We study the area and see which alternative could work the best. Because in many cases, some people have great ideas. However, there is no, they're not, if you try to apply them in reality, they never work. Because, for example, in our case, we are far away from everything. The only way to transport goods is to use a boat through the river. There's no roads. So that's pretty expensive already to sell, for example, even to sell some vegetables and say they want to do organic farming and then bring back the vegetables to the city. There's also a big cost associated with that through the transportation. So there's a lot of issues that we look at. And try to see which one could work.
And then the things that have failed, I found it interesting that you had said that there had been some things tried in that region and that the expectations just weren't met. And that would seem to be a huge disincentive to trying something else.
Correct. It's very important that that between the local communities and ourselves, the expectations are very clear and usually very important for themselves to understand that this project is not going to be our project, it's going to be their project only. So that means like we're here to give support, but at the end, they are the one to find the ways. That's what we want them to feel at least. But I do agree that expectations are definitely a big issue. Yeah, because many local communities, when they see outsiders, they expect a lot in return.
And then has human health been an issue with the bushmeat trade involving gorillas? Because gorilla meat and other primate meat can be a source of various diseases, including, you know, Ebola or HIV AIDS. Has that been an issue? And if it has that also prompted support for stopping the bushmeat trade?
You know, surprising enough, and it's not surprising actually, I should say that, the locals are not aware about that bushmeat trade is risky in terms of issue, you know, with HIV, like you mentioned, and Ebola disease. So that's why we started this big conservation awareness related to health issues, right? To start to put in the mind of people that there's also a very health, there's a big issue with health. And also for the government is a very important issue. However, now if you come back to the basics, the people do not really care, you know, about that so much, because what they do care is, you know, to find some income at the end of the day, to find some food. So basically, even if you tell some people who go hunting and you tell them about those issues, they are aware about it. But, you know, they've been hunting for the last past 10 years, 20 years. They've never been sick, at least is what I think from that. And so we still have to find, I think, with the same issues of the issue of economic alternative. Yes, the health human issue is extremely important because many diseases can emerge from that. We all agree on that. But as far as the local individual who is hunting in the forest, it's not, even if he's aware of that.
And then have you worked on other primates as well, either in
this region? I didn't work with other primates. However, I went to check other projects that other organizations are doing, for example, in the other Congo with the bonobos, which is also that's endemic to the other Congo. And also we are working closely with the other organizations who works on chimpanzees, like with, for example, the Jane Goodall Institute. But again, we are working on a different level.
I was just about to ask how that's different, what you're doing is different from these other organizations.
Well, the other organizations, what they have done so far in the past until now is mostly taking abandoned illegal chimpanzees or gorillas that were sold at the market as alive, so still live specimen, like usually orphaned chimpanzees or gorillas, and then bring them back to a closed sanctuary for readaptation, I should say. And then hopefully in the future, they would like to use them in the wild. That's where the focus they were. Now, of course, finally, I should say, some other organizations like Jane Goodall Institute are doing a lot of work with education. And also, they're planning to release some of the chimpanzees in the wild. In our approach, we want to go to work directly in the field where the killing is occurring. Of course, they also kill chimpanzees. That's why we have fallen like babies, chimpanzees, sold in the markets alive as a pet. But we want to get right on the ground where action starts. rather hunting, someone work with the local community, stop that. If an approach will go, they will work directly into the market, farmers market. We believe that focusing only on the farmers market, or mostly in the market, to stop illegal bushmeat of gorillas, selling of bushmeat gorillas in the farmers market, is almost a lost cause. Why? Because it's easy to hide the meat, and there's so much corruption.
So what's the alternative?
We do believe that if you can stop the cause at its source, where exactly everything starts, in the forest, where in the village somebody goes to kill the gorillas and work together to stop that, then we believe that we will stop the rest. Now, of course, some other organizations focus on other priorities. They think that law enforcement is more important.
What do you think of that approach?
We believe in that case that law enforcement is not mature enough to work in terms of reality on the ground. There's so much corruption that law enforcement does not exist. It's almost a joke. Basically, in that point, it's better to work on the ground where we think we have better success, which is economic alternatives, and working on the locals, the personal level, and try to stop the hunting directly.
Now, in some places, it's not always the local people who are doing the hunting. I guess with the African elephants, it was long thought that, you know, it was a similar situation where local people were hunting to provide an income. And then recent studies have shown it's, you know, it's partly that, but it's also organized crime networks who are physically hiring local people to do these killings, these mass killings of elephants for their ivory. In this situation, it still is mostly just, you know, local people hunting for their livelihood. Is that correct?
That's correct. At this point, we have no evidence of illegal, other type of illegal trafficking connected to that kind of hunting.
And then if people want to help the gorillas or learn more about the bushmeat trade, what would you recommend that they do? Because in the United States, there have been some recent studies that there is a bushmeat market sprouting up here, as particularly with African immigrant populations. And there was some big cases in New York recently regarding the sale of bushmeat and some undercover investigations into the bushmeat markets in New York. So I guess, you know, it is somewhat here, not as big.
Right.
But what would you recommend that people do if they want to learn more or to get involved in these issues?
Well, first of all, they can also check our website at endangeredspeciesinternational.org, and we have posted a lot of information. But as far as an individual living in the United States, positive impact is going to be limited. Just mentioned, you know, some undercover method, some people selling some bushmeat market in New York. Well, if you know that, you should immediately, of course, inform the authorities. Now, you know what? It's the main problem is to sell endangered species. I mean, let's also not forget that in the bushmeat market, you find any kind of species, and then some species are still common in the wild, and I don't think it's fair, you know, to arrest or to condemn people because they are eating rats, you know, because it's, you know, you see a lot of rats in the bushmeat market also. So we want to make sure that if you see species sold in a market, and you want to make sure that it's an illegal species, and if you're not sure, you can always take pictures, and you can send us the pictures. We have very well qualified people who can identify a piece of meat if it's smoked, like I said before. But basically, all the actions to be done in Africa. That's what it is. It's not like most of the meat is exported to another country. And therefore, the support as far as the United States, they can give it's a financial support to our organization or other organizations doing helping to fight illegal bushmeat, especially the gorillas.
In terms of alternative income, have there been, or have you been looking at things that could be sold overseas as part of, you know, creating a market for a particular product that protects the gorillas by providing alternative incomes that's certified, you know, friendly to wildlife and creating a
Yes, that's
way?
Also right. We have been thinking, we have been looking at this alternative, yes. We like, maybe we're thinking about organic farming and getting certified, the community could get certified and then sell the product overseas because, you know, in Congo, nobody cares about organic farming. And anyways, there is no certification for that. So if it will be certified, it will be only for export. And we're also thinking, we are looking right now also about coffee, about organic plantation of coffee. And probably also getting certified with that. But again, it's more likely that the products that will be made in Congo will be sold probably in Europe because of the shipping. It's cheaper and it's, of course, closer. And also because of the tie of Central Africa with Europe. Yeah.
Right. Well, I really appreciate your taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you for taking the time, Kira.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation on gorillas and the bushmeat trade with Pierre Fidenci, president of Endangered Species International. Now, let me play you today's creature call once again and see if you've guessed it correctly. This week's creature call is the sound of the world's largest primate. It's an endangered species that lives in Africa's remaining equatorial forests. It's also been the subject of today's show. It's the Western Lowland Gorilla. The Western Lowland Gorilla ranges through southern Cameroon, the southwest corner of the Central African Republic, West Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, and south to the Cabinda enclave of Angola, which is north of the Zaire River. Its populations are estimated at about 100 to 200,000 individuals, although the exact numbers are unknown because these shy apes inhabit some of Africa's densest and most remote rainforests. The forests of Congo-Brazzaville are currently considered to harbor the major population of western lowland gorillas, where they're protected by the remoteness of large swampy forest areas. However, this species is threatened by habitat loss and poaching pressure. This sound clip is of a mother, father, and oldest son arguing when the father tries to take a coconut from the mother. Listen to the sound of Western Lowland Gorillas. Archived episodes of The Wildlife are available on iTunes, at my website, laurelnimi.com, and at laurelnimi.podbean.com. You can stream The Wildlife live at theradiator.org every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, if you have comments about this show or ideas for future ones, you can email me at laurel@laurelnimi.com. The Wildlife is generously underwritten by the Lake Champlain Land Trust, a nonprofit organization permanently conserving the lands, lakeshore, critical wildlife habitats, and natural areas of Lake Champlain. More information is available online at lclt.org. This has been The Wildlife. I'm your host, Laurel Nimi, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP, in Burlington, Vermont.